I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Octavio Freire, President, CTO, and co-founder at Safeguard Cyber, the industry's first and only comprehensive collaboration, chat, and social media security platform. To learn more about Safeguard Cyber, visit safeguardcyber.com. Also joining us is former White House CIO and top cybersecurity expert, Teresa Payton. She's author of the new book, Manipulated, and CEO at Fortalice, a global cybersecurity firm. Welcome, Octavio and Teresa. It's so great to have you both with us today.
Thank you, Hillary. My pleasure.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to the conversation today.
Excellent. Well, Octavio, let's start with you. We're here for a discussion on Zoom security and privacy. We're actually using Zoom as well. Just when we think Zoom may be safer, there's news like we heard last week, a huge Zoom flaw letting hackers completely take over your Mac or PC. So, Octavio, what's the current state of security around Zoom?
Hillary, thank you so much again for having me here. That's a great question, but I think that we just need to realize that every app has to work through vulnerabilities, right? And in some cases, a zero day may emerge. If you think of the everyday news, let's say comes out of Microsoft email, and I'm not picking on Microsoft email, but it's certainly a critical app just as Zoom. They are highly visible. So I would contend it's par for the course that security teams need to identify these vulnerabilities and quickly patch. So, such a highly used app, such as Zoom, we work with them. They're our close partners, and surely they have a very strong process to identify a bug bounty program, such as the one that identified this browser flaw. And then quickly patch and work through the vulnerability, right? But just like other critical apps that, such as email that we're mentioning, you ultimately need to establish your own security stance as an enterprise. Look, if you consider email, it's common that enterprises have sometimes three vendors protecting their email systems. And as we have changed our collaboration to using apps such as Zoom or Teams or Slack or WhatsApp or Telegram, or the list goes on and on, right? Or social media, enterprises need to catch up and realize they need to just make their stance on those apps just as strong as they have on email. So, we work closely with Zoom to provide that Zoom governance and that additional security that enterprises need by moving policies that have in all these channels into Zoom. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. And speaking of that, Teresa, you joined us on a podcast episode last year, just after the pandemic hit, when Zoom usage literally zoomed globally. And we talked to you about reports of a vulnerability, which Zoom has since patched, that enabled hackers to randomly scan and eavesdrop on Zoom conferences. We also talked to you about Zoom bombing and privacy issues on the platform. So is there a heightened awareness now that Zoom is in such a widespread use with so many people working remotely?
Yeah, there definitely is heightened awareness, both on Zoom's part and on the part of many users. And I know one thing is for certain, is that cyber criminals always go where the action is. They read the headlines, they watch the news just like we do. And when they saw Zoom shooting up in popularity, they're always gonna look for those potential weak points to take advantage. The one thing I will applaud Zoom for is each time an issue does come up, they do take ownership of the issue and they work in such a way to promote better safety and security, not just for Zoom, but for the greater collective good. And there are a lot of lessons learned. As Octavio was saying, each platform will inherently, in trying to make features and functions available in sort of this ever reimagined, evolving situation we find ourselves in the pandemic, and then getting ready for post-pandemic, as collaboration tools need to necessarily evolve and change to meet the different business needs and business processes that are being reimagined and evolving and changing, there will be times where things are pushed out. And from a user story perspective, you know, not everything will be fully understood as to how the user will really interact with those new features and functions, which then creates the opportunity for vulnerabilities with cyber criminals. And so there will always be this nexus point between the new features and functions and then cyber criminals trying to take advantage of the platform to get in between sort of the user and the communications that they're using the platforms for. So this is going to be an ongoing battle, not just for Zoom, but any collaboration tool that's out there.
Great. And Octavio, there was a recent report published by Stanford University, which estimated around half of the U.S. workforce was remote now due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In your opinion, is this a temporary phenomenon or is this the new normal? And how does this impact security around essential collaboration platforms such as Zoom?
Hillary, our research, our surveys really indicate that the pandemic has fundamentally changed how we work going forward. What has emerged and what we've seen even with our other partners is that work from anywhere is likely the new norm. And, you know, it fundamentally changes how companies need to think about cybersecurity. Of course, you know, as Theresa mentioned, the pandemic impacted Zoom positively, right? It really emerged as that critical channel and attackers are very aware. And they see it as a new attack vector. And, you know, security and compliance, as and I would say even governance of that channel is absolutely needed. So we have to realize that Zoom is almost like many apps in one. It is a chat, right? You can also chat. There is a video stream. There is an audio stream. There is a file sharing app that is part of it. And all of these generate really critical data. But in all those aspects of Zoom, can be exploited ultimately and generate company risk. And this is not only the case for Zoom. So unless you think of it that way and you think through how to protect all these various aspects that make up Zoom and the risks they face as an enterprise, you'll always have vulnerabilities.
And Theresa, are collaboration tools such as Zoom, Slack, and others a new major focal point for CISOs and security teams now that they've become so popular due in part to the pandemic?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad you asked this question, Hillary, because I just have to put a plug in for my security colleagues. CISOs and security teams, they're exhausted and they're expected to do way too much with way too little resources. And so while all collaboration tools are a focal point for CISOs and security teams, they're also balancing the fact that the business units don't want to be inconvenienced and neither do end customers. And sadly, features that, you know, maybe Octavio and I would say, you know, it's like air and water for us, a feature like multi-factor authentication. For others, the end users that are not in the security fields, they see them as cumbersome and productivity killers, so they want to skip them. So we do have a real ongoing challenge on our hands where we need to be able to seamlessly integrate collaboration tools into the workflow of both the business units as well as the customers, while at the same time making security very seamless and truly more sort of elegant than it is today. And so it is on the front minds, but gosh, there's the list just seems to be never ending and almost, you know, kind of bottomless.
And Octavio, you're a co-founder at Safeguard Cyber, and the company is unique in its focus around protecting channels like mobile chat, social media, collaboration, and also enterprise applications. We understand you're also doing some cutting-edge development around Zoom security. So do you want to tell us about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're really excited about everything we can do here because we've, you know, as I mentioned, we work closely with Zoom to provide additional governance. And we look at our own data to understand where the risks are, right? And how we can complement Zoom. So for instance, our ability to find malware that is shared inside files that are shared into chats is unique to us. You know, I could, for example, in this Zoom, go to my file share and upload something. You could download it, and we can transfer malware within the enterprise that way. That is certainly a concern. Our ability to extend policy to the audio stream is also a pretty novel feature. So think about this. We're the three of us are talking here, right? And I say, hey, Project San Francisco, right? Already kind of, you know, here is the funding, the owners, this is when it's going to roll out. Like I could even create a corporate espionage situation just by talking about it. So how do you identify when certain organizations have everything locked down? They have their phones locked down, their emails locked down, and they're really worried from a DLP perspective. It could be leaked through an audio stream. It could be leaked through a video stream. I could hold up a sign with critical company or intellectual property, right? I mean, there's so many ways that you could defeat your security stance through Zoom. And again, not Zoom fault. This is all humans, you know, using a awesome application for wrong purposes, right? So it's really hard to do the things we do, understand if there's malware, if there's a DLP, an audio stream or a video stream, or I could inspect, I could upload a link, which is I could deploy a spear phishing attack through a Zoom chat by sharing links that are deceptive. So, you know, if you think about Zoom in all those ways and how it could be used for cyber espionage, for spear phishing delivery, as an attack vector for to create an insider threat, we use an advanced machine learning. We protect, you know, and even issues of are, you know, is Hillary really Hillary? Like we're inspecting even from a user perspective to make sure people say who they are from a governance perspective and, you know, and who's logging in where. There's so many ways that it could be used improperly and weaken your security stance. That's, you know, we came up with these novel solutions. So we're super excited about the receptivity in the marketplace for our Zoom capabilities that really focus on innovation has been extremely positive, Hillary.
That's excellent to hear. And Teresa, how important is it for organizations to have a cybersecurity vendor and a vendor community around collaboration tools and social media? Because for example, we know from experience that in the early days of everything from networks to applications to IoT devices, you name it, IT and security teams had to roll a lot of their own security under vendor solutions, came to market and matured.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really great question. And what I would say to security teams and CISO is you don't have to go it alone anymore. So my biggest advice is do your homework. Tell your partners what you need from them. Sort of, you know, what do you believe your blind spots could be? Where do you have staffing and skill set concerns? And you may be pleasantly surprised at how the vendors you're having the conversations with can actually rally around you to support your privacy and security needs. I also want to comment on something that Octavio talked about, which is, you know, not just like the different privacy and security frameworks, but even sort of validation that people are who they say they are and have a legitimate purpose for engaging and interacting on whatever the collaboration platform is, from email to chat to Zoom, whatever the platform is. There's a great article that just came out from Politico talking about how an online Lego gamer actually infiltrated the White House press corps using basically saying because of, you know, COVID and different types of concerns, basically posed as a reporter for a fictitious White House news network and fooled real correspondents into asking questions on behalf of a Casey Montague. So we really, it really does show that as we're all reimagining, you know, kind of how we do our processes, trying to be open, engaging, authentic, how people can take advantage of that. And so having that ability to have a vendor who could be one of your partners can really make a huge difference in bolstering your team and eventually bolstering your actual defenses.
Absolutely. And Octavia, the cybersecurity industry is suffering through a labor shortage as well. So we have 3.5 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs in 2021, according to research from Cybersecurity Ventures. So a big issue around Zoom security is the total number of people who actually know anything about it. Do you see that as a problem as well?
Absolutely. Yes, I do. And, I think just by everyone, by all the customers I talk to, it's what I think we all realize is just how hard it is to recruit in cyber. It's so different, right? It's not accounting. There is no degree that you can hire against. And enterprise, I think, really struggle with that. You know, sometimes folks are just really good hackers, and you know, they have degrees in completely far afield areas. But a good cyber professionals, but HR just does not know how to put them into a the same box they would other professions. So I think that creates a lot of problems. And in terms of Zoom, what that means is as you try to scale up all your collaboration channels, in addition to Zoom, you know, you just can't rely on humans because of the labor shortage to provide that security, right? Even if you just have something that does detection, well, then you have to have staff to work through the detections and respond in real time. That's why automating the security process on Zoom, use an advanced AI that not only detects these risks that we've been talking about, but can respond, is really critical. CISOs just don't have the staff otherwise.
Yeah, that's a great point on automation, helping fill that gap in the meantime. Teresa, do you think CISOs and security leaders should be carving out some time for some of their people to be trained up on Zoom security to try to get ahead of that problem?
Yeah, I mean, definitely if you can make the time to actually get the security team, the privacy team completely trained up, that's incredibly helpful. In addition to that, you know, one of the things once they are trained up, whether it's on Zoom or even other collaboration platforms, the other best practice that I'm seeing is when CISOs invite their team to say, okay, now that you're trained up, what's your worst nightmare? And then actually creating the policy framework and the training for the business units around those worst nightmares. And that can be a really huge way to sort of, you know, take the best of any type of automation you have in place to automate the security. But then there's always going to be those human elements. And so, for example, what's your worst nightmare? Well, my worst nightmare is one of our engineers will have intellectual property written on a board behind them in a Zoom call, you know, that is then, you know, being recorded and shared and, you know, hasn't really been thought about. Okay, well, then there's a way to do a policy framework to say to all of your staff, hey, pay attention to what's in the background of your Zoom call. Maybe you want them to put up a green screen and then use some type of a standard background so you're not getting little peaks, you know, when somebody moves in front of their standard background, if you have that green screen there. So there's a lot of different ways taking advantage of carving out that time for training, complementing that with automation of security and privacy protocols, and then turning that into a playbook on, so how should we train the rest of the company into how to, you know, kind of join us in the fight to be more secure and to protect the privacy of customer data, as well as intellectual property.
Right. Great. And Octavio, I want to go back to your new Zoom security solution. What is involved with actually deploying it in a large enterprise or a company of any size, I guess, for that matter? We definitely want to hear about large organizations, since we have many Fortune 500 and Global 2000 CISOs and security leaders who listen to our podcast. But share a little bit about that with us.
Sure. Just before I answer that question, I think one thing that we have to realize is that there's almost like this data war emerging at the enterprise level. And we see it with, for example, big banks that are customers, big pharma, really super large enterprises. When I say, hey, join my Zoom, I keep the data. And all the audio, all the video, everything that's shared now belongs to company A. So you can see the problem that's emerging when you have two large organizations and the employee has certain rules they need to follow on which Zoom is allowable, because that will determine who gets to keep that data. So, you know, it's this really underscores how critical and what kind of tip, you know, type of data we're talking about when you think of Zoom, because we don't, you know, sometimes we forget to imagine that a video stream is data or audio stream is data. So with that, in terms of deployment, we realized that it had to be easy. We realized that it had to scale up to thousands and thousands of employees, right? Since Zoom, once it's purchased, it's often purchased for everyone. And you can have organizations with hundreds of thousands of employees. So we've built this all cloud to cloud. It's completely agentless. It's also hyper portable. And by that we mean, if you use Zoom on your iPhone, if you use it on your iPad, if you use the client or the web browser, we are enforcing the policies. So it doesn't create a situation where, okay, you know, the only protected Zoom is if you use Zoom from this laptop, which of course, in a work from anywhere situation that we're living, we wouldn't be in a work from home wouldn't be acceptable. So, you know, really our deployment kind of matches the speed and the scale of the enterprise.
Fantastic. And Teresa, what's your biggest concern around Zoom security going forward? Is it that CISOs and security teams are just not paying enough attention to it? Or is it that they aren't doing the basics such as patching, which is a widespread problem in our industry, or what?
Yeah, you ask a really good question. And it's actually, in some regards, almost more fundamental where my biggest concern comes from, because I don't believe that many CISOs and security teams have sat down and said, when I think about mission critical systems, one of the mission critical platforms is now actually collaboration tools like Zoom. And so when you think about mission critical, most of the time people talk about login, authentication, emails sometimes, as much as we all dread our inboxes, can be considered mission critical. If you're in banking, it's money movement platforms are considered mission critical. But I'm not sure that CISOs have sort of in the front of their minds internalized collaboration platforms as part of a 24/7 operation are actually considered at the top of the list of mission critical, not just because it's a pandemic, but in a post-pandemic environment. So if you start to think about collaboration systems being as important or maybe more important than some of the traditional mission critical platforms, then it's going to get a different perspective on priorities. So the question is, because it becomes more of it's treated more as a utility than it is sort of a necessary feature or function. So that's, I think, one of my biggest concerns around Zoom security and collaboration platform security going forward. It's like everybody knows it's necessary and it's important, but it's not considered sort of a customer facing type of application. It's sort of like, well, wouldn't the security already be built in? Isn't that somebody else's responsibility? And, you know, really thinking about even what Octavio said, which is your Zoom or mine, you know, he or she who controls the Zoom also controls the recording and the data and the metadata and the participants and the chats. So things like that probably have not really been at the forefront of security teams, legal teams, and privacy experts, and should be.
Excellent. And Octavio, what are the potential consequences of not adequately securing Zoom for any organization going forward?
No, Theresa has a great point, right? I mean, it's the impact could be really widespread. And we've seen it, right? It's unfortunately been in the news over the last year during the pandemic, and it continues. You have issues of reputational risk. Just here in Charlottesville, at the University of Virginia, there was a terrible situation that happened with some fraternities. So I would put those more in the reputational side, which, you know, affects morale, and in public companies affects the stock price. So, but it doesn't stop at reputational risk. You have a regulatory compliance problem. Highly regulated enterprises are very concerned what is distributed, what is said, what is absorbed on these communications, just like any other channel. You know, you can see where big banks, for example, there's a lot of regulation around what is said about a stock, its expectation about the stock, and to whom. You know, if you can't have Zoom then become the means to get around those controls. So, and even at a very basic level, you know, just inappropriate business conduct is a source of legal liability. And this is, you know, all those three are, even before we get to the security aspect of it, which, you know, if it becomes the means by, if it is treated by attackers as a new attack vector, you know, of course, could lead to breaches and so forth. So we try to think of the different categories of risks that this new channel creates. We actually mapped it to sometimes for customers against the MITRE attack framework, because it is multifaceted.
Great. And Theresa, you know our audience well, so do you have any closing thoughts for them as they listen to this episode?
Sure. I mean, what I would say is, whether it's Zoom or other collaboration tools, spend the time with your contact at that vendor. I would also ask them, you know, what are the top three mistakes you see your other commercial customers making? You know, and you'd be surprised what they'll end up sharing with you. So they probably won't tell you the other company's names, and they shouldn't. But you can learn a lot from mistakes other people have made that they can share with you. I would also ask them, you know, do they have a sort of a gold standard of, you know, wish list items of configuration settings that you should be considering? They may not all be practical to implement because of the way you're using the collaboration tool. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, Octavio mentioned it earlier, which is you need to have partners. And so after you talk to the, whether it's Zoom or other collaboration platforms, to get that kind of insight and information, if you still find your team as stretched thin, look for opportunities for automation. Look for opportunities to have other partners help you and help your team. I know everybody is stretched way too thin, and don't feel like you need to go it alone.
Excellent. Thank you. And Octavio, any final thoughts that you have before we end this episode together?
Absolutely, Hillary. I want to build on two great points that Theresa made. First is about the security stance. It is absolutely important that you establish that. And as new Zoom clients are rolled out, it is applied, or if someone changes your security stance, it is rolled back to the gold standard. That is something that we spend a lot of time in our platform to make sure that at any time you have some confidence that it's been operated against your policies. And the second thing that Theresa said that really hit home is this notion of we need to start thinking of it as critical infrastructure. It just is. Like, you know, if we take a step back and look at the world, if Zoom was not here, we'd all be in trouble, right? It got us through this pandemic. It is such an amazing piece of technology, but it has become critical infrastructure, as Theresa pointed out. And it's not just Zoom. You know, Microsoft Teams and Slack, and there's a category here. And all of them, we have to think of it as these critical apps. And by the way, CISOs do have these frameworks, right? Our SAP systems, our Salesforce, our email are treated this way. It's just, you know, we need to realize what they have become. And I think it'll make all lives better.
Fantastic. Well, Octavio and Teresa, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been wonderful.
Thank you, Hillary. Thank you. And Theresa, thank you so much. Really good discussion.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation. I learned a lot from your perspective, Octavio. And Hillary, thank you for guiding the conversation with excellent questions today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you both so much. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was Octavio Freire, President, CTO, and co-founder at Safeguard Cyber, the industry's first and only comprehensive collaboration, chat, and social media security platform. To learn more about our sponsor, Safeguard Cyber, visit safeguardcyber.com. Also joining us was former White House CIO and top cybersecurity expert, Teresa Payton. She's author of the new book, Manipulated, and CEO at Fortalice, a global cybersecurity firm. You can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.